the Minnesota House of Representatives Committee on Public Safety and Criminal Justice Reform will come to order. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Mariani.
Present.
Vice Chair Frazier.
Here.
All right. Representative Johnson.
Present.
Representative Edelson.
Present.
Representative Feist. Representative Feist. Representative Grosso.
Here.
Representative Hollins.
Present.
Representative Hewitt.
Present.
Representative Cleavorn.
Present.
Representative Long.
Present.
Representative Lucero.
The day is flying by.
Representative Mueller. Representative Mueller. Representative Novotny.
Present.
Representative O'Neill.
I am here.
Representative Pinto.
Present.
Representative Poston.
Present.
Representative Rowley.
Rowley's happy to be here.
Representative Vang. Representative Vang. Representative Zhang.
I'm here.
Representative Mueller.
Mueller present.
Representative Vang. That concludes roll call.
Very well. Members, there is a quorum. And let me just share again that this hearing is being conducted remotely on an electronic platform pursuant to Minnesota House Rule 10.01, Emergency House Operations in Response to the COVID-19 Infectious Disease Pandemic Requiring Public Health Exercise and Social Distancing. The public can visit the Minnesota House website to view House Rule 10.01, as well as to visit the committee page for information on how to access the proceedings via streaming video, as well as instructions on how to participate in public testimonies. Members, today we have, let me just check something really quickly. Members, today we have two bills up, House File 336 by Chair Becker Finn, as well as House File 306 by Representative Frazier. And members, the focus of these bills today will be on criminal justice reform and driving issues. Some of you who recall our committee sessions over the last 2 years know that there have been pretty extensive conversations around possible changes to state law that govern this area of driving related issues and the impact that they have on our citizenry through the fines and fees and surcharge structures. And so the bills before us are not new subjects for us, but they certainly are new for this legislative session. And I look forward to the conversation today. Members, I'm going to do something unusual with this hearing. Because of the interconnected relationship of issues between these two bills, we have several testifiers who wish to testify on both bills. And so for the sake of efficiency, both on their end as well as on our end, I'm going to have several testifiers come forward to speak about the issues in both House File 336 and House File 306. Hopefully they'll be able to hang around, you know, for question and answer. Then we're going to pull up each bill formally before the committee so that it's actionable by us, and then there'll be further testimony, and then we'll do a question and answer at the end of each bill. So we won't start with bills before us. We'll start with testimony on bills that will be up before us in a few minutes. So members, let me get my act together here. I just realized I had not opened my participants list, so now I can see everyone. So members, I'm gonna ask Dave Hunt, Camille Bryant, and Sandy Paavola to come forward in that order, preferably Dave Hunt from the St. Paul City Attorney's Office. And welcome to the committee. Mr. Hunt, please state your name for the record and give us your testimony today. You may be muted. I don't see a picture yet either. Okay, there could be an issue here, so let me move forward and we'll come back to Mr. Hunt. Camille Bryant, the Hennepin County Public Defender, if you can come forward and state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Good afternoon. My name is Camille Bryant. I work as a public defender in Hennepin County. I have practiced as a public defender in Hennepin County for 13 years. And to put this into context, in order to qualify for a public defender, a client must make no more than $15,613 per year if they are single, or $32,188 per year if they have a family of four. Based upon the average incomes for Minneapolis, my clients would include, as an example, PCAs, waitresses, janitors, grocery store, and daycare workers. And to help further provide context in terms of the economic strain that my clients work through, the average cost of rental housing in Minneapolis is roughly $19,000 a year. It's also true that I represent a significant number of people who suffer from mental health issues, such as diagnosable issues of bipolar, schizophrenia, as well as chemical dependency issues and homelessness. I've represented persons charged with felonies for a significant portion of my career, but over the past 2 years, I've been representing people charged solely with misdemeanors and gross misdemeanors. I normally have multiple clients with more than 10 unresolved driving after suspension cases. 24 is not unusual. I rarely had felony clients with a string of driving after suspension cases. I just didn't see them. They didn't have them. For each of these cases, there's a fine, a late charge, a reinstatement fee, and if resolved, a public defender surcharge. Until those charges are paid, clients cannot get their license valid. It can cost as much as $900 per ticket in order to resolve those tickets after all the fees and surcharges are added in. The first question that I get asked when my clients decide and figure out that they can go to court to resolve those traffic tickets is, are they valid? If they are not valid, they may be referred to a program to help them get valid. And then there would be at least one additional court appearances, sometimes two to three. At least one of the driver's programs, Driving with Pride, actually leaves clients worse off than they were before they would have come to court. When I look at the tickets that my clients come to court in and the corresponding police reports, there are a few common trends that emerge. The first one is that it's common to find multiple tickets issued around the same time of day on the same stretch of road issued by the same police officer over a period of time. My clients that come in with these strings of cases are almost always Black men. The stops are often initiated because the police officers ran their plates opposed to some driving behavior. These tickets set my clients on a cycle of indebtedness to the state. It puts them in the challenging position of knowingly breaking the law to travel to and from work, or to change jobs or find alternative childcare, and basically turn their lives upside down because of the lack of driver's license. it disproportionately affects Black men. It impedes their ability to engage in the society as a whole. And in regards to the surcharge is also added into the fines and fees that they end up paying. And they also make it challenging for other types of situations, such as my homeless clients or my clients who need to go into treatment. Their ability to engage with the system in order to reduce that $75 surcharge becomes pretty onerous. And again, like this charge gets added to every single case that I touch. So if I have a client who's been homeless and has a string of trespasses because the place they like to sleep is a parking ramp, then every single one of those cases that gets resolved, that $75 attaches to them and follows them as they move through treatment or programming or anything in terms of rehabilitation to try and put them back on their lives. And it's just sitting out there waiting. Of course, if they have programming that's offered to them, they are able to do STS to cover it, and but only for a period of time. Once that period of time lapses, it goes to resource recovery, where additional fees get attached to it and interest gets attached to it unless and until it's paid. It's pretty burdensome in terms of a person being able to move past whatever brought them into the court system and begin to live a productive life. And so I would ask that you adopt both bills. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bryant, from the Hennepin County Public Defender, for your testimony and for shedding a light on a reality that I think many of us who may not be of that particular social class may be invisible to us. I'm going to ask if you can stick around. I hope you can. There may be questions. So thank you for that. I neglected to ask Ms. Anna Odegaard to get us going. And part of the reason for that is because Ms. Odegaard, who's been working on these issues for a number of years, wanted to lay a little bit of a context. And by the way, Ms. Bryant, I thought you did a great context laying. But wanted to lay a context within among the three early testifiers here. And so if Anna, if Ms. Odegaard is available, I'd like to have her come forward, make some brief comments, and then I'll turn over to the other two testifiers for this portion. We will be hearing again later from Ms. Odegaard on one of the bills. So Anna, if you're there, I'd ask you to come forward, state your name for the record, and provide us with your statement.
I am, Mr. Chair. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. I don't see you, but I can hear you.
Oh, well, I wish you could see me too.
Yes, indeed. And your volume is a little low on my end.
Okay. Can you hear me?
I can.
Wonderful. Mr. Chair, thank you for inviting me to testify. Thank you, members of the committee. My name is Anna Odegaard, and I'm the legislative advocate for the Minnesota Asset Building Coalition. I really just wanted initially here to introduce our testifiers who have taken time out of their day to help talk about why these reforms in front of you are so important. They'll testify both on House File 306 and 336, as the chair mentioned, and I believe there'll be a more detailed explanation of the bills after the testimony. But just to sort out the two bills, I wanted to mention that House File 306 gives judges discretion to reduce or waive or offer community service in lieu of the $75 state surcharge that Camille Bryant was just talking about, to give them that discretion in cases of financial hardship. This is a surcharge that's added to every traffic and criminal violation, and revenue is going to the general fund. House File 336 ends driver's license suspensions for unpaid parking and traffic tickets while maintaining the collections system for unpaid tickets, so there's still accountability for driving behavior. It also eliminates the additional suspension period that gets imposed after a person pays a ticket for driving after suspension. So as I think you know, we have three testifiers we invited here today. You've heard from Camille Bryant, a public defender in Hennepin County, who's been working with us on these bills for a few years. Next, I'm hoping you'll get to hear from Dave Hunt. I know he's working on getting his audio working. Dave Hunt is the supervising attorney in the Criminal Prosecution Division of the St. Paul Attorney's Office. And then I'm really pleased that Sandy Pavala is here to testify today as well. She's a resident of the First Ladies of the Hillside community, working with an organization called CHUM, which is a social service agency in Duluth that's comprised of people of faith working together to provide basic necessities and to offer support to people experiencing homelessness. So really glad that Sandy could be with us here today too. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Odegaard. My apologies for not calling on you earlier for setting the table here, but nonetheless, it's been set. So thank you. I look forward to hearing from you again in a few minutes. So with that, I'm going to call for Dave Hunt from the St. Paul City Attorney's Office. Mr. Hunt, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you hear me okay now?
Yes, indeed. And I can see you as well.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, members of the committee. It's my pleasure to be here. I'm Dave Hunt. I'm a prosecutor with the St. Paul City Attorney's Office. I presently supervise a team of prosecutors who handle DWIs, driving offenses, non-domestic violence cases. They handle driving offenses, which are the type of case that these two bills are the subject of. I've been a criminal prosecutor for 30 years, and I feel that both of these bills are important bills and that they both promote justice and fairness within the criminal justice system. Essentially, these bills, if passed, will help low-level offenders, common, ordinary, everyday people that lose their driving privileges because of unpaid fines and fees. We're not talking about hardcore criminals. We're not talking about violent offenders. We're talking about people that drive, get tickets, and for some reason, neglect, poverty, fail to pay all the fees, and then get their license suspended. And too often, in my experience, I see them get caught in the revolving doors of not paying the fees and then getting their licenses suspended and then getting more fees tacked on, more court appearances, and so forth. I feel that these bills are going to help ordinary people. I've handled every type of criminal case for the past 30 years, from first-degree murder down to speeding tickets. When you work in the criminal justice system as long as I do, you get to know the people involved, particularly the people that come in as defendants in court. And as I said before, these bills are going to help the ordinary person get out of that cycle, revolving cycle of not paying fees, losing their license, and getting caught in the criminal justice system. In a prior job, I worked with troubled veterans in veterans court. I prosecuted veterans that came in for problems that they had in life, a lot of times due to combat overseas and the emotional wounds that were brought upon them. And they lose their license for DWIs or other traffic offenses, and they get caught up in the system. And too often I saw those type of folks unable to get to court, unable to get to their treatment, unable to make appointments, medical appointments, because they had suspended licenses. And it seemed to me quite an injustice for that to happen. These bills aren't going to just help veterans. They're going to help the everyday person that maybe is having trouble paying bills, maybe having trouble getting their kids to the doctor's office, having trouble getting to their jobs because they don't have enough money to pay off the fines and fees. So ordinary folks are getting their licenses suspended, and I see them in court unable to make it to court because the license is suspended, unable to make it to their jobs, and unable to make it to daycare centers and that type of thing. Ordinary activities that most people should be able to do because their licenses are suspended. They're often caught in that dilemma of, should I pay off the several hundred dollars in fines and fees, or should I risk driving to go to school or to go to my job? They get stopped by the police, and then they have another ticket, another court appearance, and more fines and fees. Both of these bills will help eliminate that cycle, that revolving cycle that these poor folks get trapped in. The bills aren't a free pass for people that are in the criminal justice system. People are still going to get traffic tickets. They're still going to get their traffic tickets certified to their driving record. DWI defendants are going to still get suspended for driving drunk. People that steal cars or transport drugs in their cars, they're going to still lose their driving privileges. What the bills are aimed at are just the low-level types of cases, people that have too many speeding tickets. They have tickets for failure to yield, running a stop sign, and then they get caught up in the system and lose their license, and they just can't afford to pay back the fees and the fines to get their licenses back. We'll still be able to prosecute repeat traffic offenders that have too many tickets. Those folks are still going to get suspended. They're still going to get prosecuted. But what these bills will get at is just the ordinary common person that can't pay the fine or fee. We have laws in place for repeat traffic offenders that get too many tickets in 1 year. Those people will still be prosecuted and still be held accountable. Right now, the criminal justice system is under a huge strain. There are hundreds and thousands of cases in Minnesota that it's bogging down the criminal justice system. Passing these bills will help to free up the resources that are there, free up the judges that need to attend to the cases, free up public defenders who are just have a crushing caseload that are way overburdened. The bills, if passed, would help to free up my prosecutors in my office to attend to more serious cases, to attend to the domestic violence cases that we prosecute, to attend to the repeat DWI cases that we prosecute, the things that really matter. We'll be freed up from having to attend to the smaller traffic offenses and the suspensions that come out of the traffic offenses. So I'm asking the committees to support this legislation. In my opinion, in my office's opinion, both bills are worthwhile and both bills are going to promote justice and fairness. Thank you for the time. I appreciate you having me here.
Thank you, Mr. Hunt. I really appreciate your testimony and hoping that you can stick around for a little bit as well. Thank you. With that, then we'll move to Sandy Pavala, who's with, I have First Ladies of the Hillside. I heard Chum. I'm familiar with Chum, Ms. Pavala, and members. That anti-poverty organization has been around for many years, and I spent some pretty powerful time with them, a decade ago when we had the Legislative Commission on Poverty, and just saw the amazing vision that comes from your community there in Duluth. So I look forward to your testimony. If you can state your name for the record and please provide your testimony, that'd be wonderful.
Yep, my name is Sandy Pavla, and the First Lady of the Hillside represents a group of us that live at the Steve O'Neill, which is permanent supportive housing through CHUM. It's a collaboration with Center City Housing and Property Management. And that itself is going to help develop the community with children and other things. It's its own program. It's really nice to be involved in. I'd just like to say hi and introduce myself. I've been in Duluth for over 25 years. I have two children. I have a 10-year-old daughter and a 2-year-old son. And right now I am on AMFIB, and I'm actually working towards my education and getting my GED accomplished. And I recently just got my license this year, and I have had multiple tickets due to driving after revocations and everything else like that and such that contributes to the other bill that you guys are talking about. But right now, I'll just fill you in a little bit about my situation with the parking tickets and such forth and how that'll affect me and my family and our lives. Let's see. Like, just in the last 4 months, I've gotten several parking tickets. They've got a new building across the street from our house. It's like City View, and we're in permanent supportive housing, so it's just kind of out of place. Along with lots of medical fields around here. So the traffic has become very high volumed, and it's very hard to regulate parking. They're starting to enforce new parking rules that they didn't do before. The day they started ticketing people, they ticketed the whole street. A lot of people on the streets are not residents, and there is not designated parking for those who live in this building here. They have parking in the back, but it's not designated so anybody can park there. It's really cold out, and parking outside with my kids is a struggle in the wintertime. I have learning disabilities, so it's hard for me to read the graphs and grids that they put up, the schedules, the parking schedules. So I don't always know which side I'm supposed to park on or which side I'm allowed to park on. So I've gotten stuck in a position where I've gotten a ticket, and that ticket ends up being $30. And it ends up, every time I get that ticket, the next time I get that invoice, it's $60, it's $90. So it adds up quickly. And it also indicates on there that they could put a boot on your car or suspend your license. And I just got my license back. I literally have done everything in my power to turn my life around, to do what's right for, you know, the community and as a person. And it's terrifying having a parking ticket say that they're going to take your license, like, after whatever you've done, you know, just because of this new regulation that they want to imply on people. It's scary. It's crazy. I can't afford to pay it because I'm on general assistance right now and with my learning disabilities and stuff. But I'm still working through that. But at this point in life, it's going to throw me into a threshold. And I feel like if I lose my license, I'm not going to be able to take my son to daycare. I'm not going to be able to go look for work or continue engaging in school activities for myself. And there's a billion other things that could happen if I lost my license. The success rate would be like totally turned around. I think that you guys should support this bill. I would very much agree if you guys give the judges the discretion to resolve these themselves. I support the bill, and I seriously hope you guys all support the bill too. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your time. I really appreciate you making the time to be with us, Ms. Pavla. It sounds to me like you're a person who's trying to do all the right things and working awfully hard at that. And by the way, best wishes on that GED. That's terrific. Changing circumstances in a tough situation. Thank you for painting that picture for us so that we understand the realities that people face out there. So through no malice on your own, you wind up in this really difficult situation. You know, $30 for some of us may not mean a lot, but when you're trying to put your life together and dealing with all sorts of challenges, it is a lot. And so it's important that we pay awfully close attention to that. Thank you for your testimony, and hopefully you can stick around a little bit.
Yep, I'll be here.
Wonderful. Ms. Bryant, it seems to me that that Sandy's story is the story perhaps that you're that you see on a regular basis. And so I guess the question is, how extraordinary is her story as you heard it, or how regular is that her story?
Yes, her story is very common. We see people in the work that I do on a daily basis. I'm dealing with persons who are struggling, just as Sandy is, to put their lives back together and are at a fragile point in putting their lives back together, meaning that they might be making progress towards that, but are at a point where any little thing will set them back tremendously. And so it's not a like for like, it's not a I'm waiting for a next paycheck. It's a now I can't pay my rent. Now I can't, you know, follow through on those other positive steps that I've been doing to put my life back together. That's a daily occurrence for me.
Yeah, thank you. And Mr. Hunt, very quickly, you know, Sandy said something at the very end, and I think you spoke to this issue as well. Sandy spoke about the discretion for judges. I'm thinking there very well might be discretion. I think we'll see when we get into this bill. I think your point was that having a systemic approach here, so that we're not, in fact, having to make all of these calls consistently, having people come to court, you know, which in and of itself, you know, could be one of those small points to Ms. Bryant's testimony that could help set someone back. You're missing, you know, work. You got to deal with children, you know, et cetera. That having a systemic approach here, where you've got an automatic focus for nonviolent, non-heavy repeaters, an ability to be efficient, both in our system, but also efficient in the lives of our Minnesota our residents. It seems to me that's an important feature to call out in these bills. So I'm just offering an opportunity for you to comment quickly on that.
Sharon Mariani, you're exactly right, and I appreciate the comments that you made, and especially the comments of Ms. Pavala, who is living in this cycle, in this system, and the hardships that she expressed, in my opinion, are very real from what I've seen 30 years of being a prosecutor. In particular, to get back to your question, in particular, House File 306 would require judges to use their discretion and make a financial analysis of a driver's situation to determine if he or she can pay the surcharge. And in cases of hardship, it allows judges full discretion to waive the entire $75 surcharge that's there. And I would add, and I didn't say this before, but if I could, I would add that judges, that's not extra work for judges. In my experience going to court every day, judges are making assessments at sentencings of a defendant's ability to pay fines and fees. They're making that assessment already. House File 306 would codify that and require that, but in my opinion, that's not extra work because they're already doing that. And in fact, there's laws on the books, Minnesota Statute 609-101, that requires judges to make financial assessments of public defender clients, all public defender clients, and then those clients that maybe not public defender clients, but tell the court that I'm poor, I'm indigent, or I'm broke. And that statute already makes judges assess the finances and determine the fine amount. House File 306 is a little different because it gives that same discretion for surcharge amounts. Right now, the surcharges are mandatory, and there's no way that as a prosecutor, I can waive those things, or the court could even waive those things. 306 gives the judges that power and that discretion, which in my mind is a great thing because it individualizes justice. It makes justice on a case-by-case basis, and I fully support that.
Okay, very well. Thank you, Mr. Hunt. So members, let's move on to the bills, and I'll try to monitor questions that may be coming. And so with that, welcome to the committee, Representative Jamie Becker-Finn. The chair moves that House File 336 be referred to the Judiciary Committee, a committee that no doubt Representative Becker-Finn has some knowledge with. Representative Becker-Finn, Chair Becker-Finn, welcome to the committee, and your bill is before us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my bill is the driver's license suspension reform piece of this conversation that we're having this afternoon. So this bill, House File 336, will stop the practice of suspending driver's licenses for several reasons that really have no bearing on public safety, mostly the failure to pay fines or the failure to appear in court. And ultimately, if the goal is that we want people to pay their fines, making it illegal for them to drive and to get to work doesn't really accomplish that goal. And what we know is that these practices disproportionately impact BIPOC drivers and low-income folks, and that it's a punitive practice, and it pushes people deeper into the criminal justice system, which there are costs associated that, not just for the individual and their family, but also for all of us and for the system itself. When their initial misbehavior, you know, maybe it's a parking ticket, may not have really impacted overall public safety in a really meaningful way in the first place. A lot of my points have already been made by the testimony that's been heard already this afternoon about how important this is and not sort of getting people on this track towards, you know, fines racking up for reasons that really don't impact public safety. I do want to clarify regarding the cost in the fiscal note of this bill that the cost of House File 336 is not because fines will be forgiven. The cost is actually the lost revenue from folks paying the $20 to have their licenses reinstated. And so sort of interestingly, it really had previously been understood that the need for the $20 fee in the first place was to cover the administrative costs due to the suspension and reinstatement. So if the license is not being suspended in the first place, it would follow that there should be a corresponding cost savings, although that is, for whatever reason, not incorporated in this current version of the fiscal note. But I think it's incredibly important to make that note, because if the license isn't being suspended in the first place, then you shouldn't need the extra staff hours to reinstate it, and thus the $20 fee. And then in addition, I want to lift up the testimony that we just heard about the hundreds of hours of prosecutor and public defender time savings, and therefore financial savings, that would come from not having to try these sort of petty misdemeanor level cases regarding unnecessary suspension of folks' licenses. So that's really the bill, and happy to take testimony. We already made it through the Transportation Committee, and happy to take questions from members of them.
And we do have, thank you, Chair Beckerfin, we do have several questions. Before we jump into that, I just want to acknowledge your last point of cost savings versus cost. You know, this is more than you say banana and I say banana, or, you know, whatever, you know, the a tomato and tomato, that's what it is. I know that this has been a, this has been a point of conversation and contention in the past. Assuming this bill continues to move, you know, we're going to have that conversation with, you know, the what goes into the fiscal note and the assumptions, you know, et cetera. Your explanation makes a heck of a lot of sense to me, but apparently there may be another logic out there that we haven't heard yet. So with that, I'm gonna call on Representative Novotny, Representative Hollins, and Representative Raleigh, beginning with Representative Novotny.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. I assume when you're looking for the other other form of logic, you weren't referring to me.
well played, Representative Novotny.
I got one. You said that statement. It's like, oh, I'm next. Like, all right. Just have a question for Mr. Hunt. Is this going to apply to no insurance? And, you know, will multiple no insurance violations be included in this? Thank you.
Thank you, Representative, or Mr. Hunt.
Chairman Mariani and Representative Novotny, no, revocations for no insurance would not be included in this legislation. If you have enough convictions for no insurance, will lead to suspensions or revocations. That will still occur. The way that I read the both bills is that this is a narrowly tailored to just traffic offenses, speeding tickets, failures to stop at a stop sign, and folks that have licenses suspended for that type of offense or revoked for that type of offense. We'll still be able to prosecute people for driving without insurance or proof of insurance.
Very well. Representative Abbey?
That was fine. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Representative Hollins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to all of the testifiers today. That was really powerful and informative. I think my statement is probably going a bit wider than what we're talking about here, but you know, all of this conversation is making me think about the fundamental question of what is the purpose of our criminal justice system. And I think it's really relevant when we're talking about these bills. You know, are we looking for something that's punitive? You know, is it to get retribution? Is it restorative? Do we want to punish people who are already struggling and are only violating rules because of those struggles? And I think that most of us here would agree that that doesn't make sense, that that's not furthering what we would like to do for our society with our criminal justice system. So I'm really excited to wholeheartedly support this bill and the other one. And I really appreciate the time that you all took to do this work and to come here and present for us.
Thank you, Representative Hollins. I think an important way to frame up the conversation today that is supported by the testimony in terms of appropriate questions, particularly for Ms. Pavala, who was impacted directly. Representative Raleigh and then Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, my question is on 306.
Oh, okay, so we'll hold off and why don't you just make sure you leave your hand up then. Super, thank you. Representative Johnson.
Chair Mariani, members. I do have some questions for the author, Representative Becker Finn, on this, dealing with the issues. We discussed this. This has been, the bill has been floating around for a number of years, and I've always had issues with it. Just because driving is not a right, is it a privilege? And to keep that privilege, you do have to follow the laws. And so I do have some issues with that, because I've noticed that the people who are continuously getting the same offenses over and over again are the ones that don't pay their fines as well. That's been my observation in 27, 28 years in law enforcement. And unfortunately, we end up knowing the people that don't have a driver's license, and we see them driving regularly. House File 336 lifts the suspension, but is silent on traffic fines. If this passes, what's the policy for those who refuse or to pay or avoid paying the fines, and they keep getting citations? I've been trying to figure that out reading this bill, and I'd like to find out if somebody continuously gets traffic citations but never pays the fees, never gets convicted, what's going to happen with that? Is their license ever going to be suspended, or as long as they don't pay their fines, nothing happens?
Chair Becker Fett, I believe Mr. Hunt spoke to this issue, but I defer to you in terms of response.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, I mean, the court would still have its other remedies at its disposal. And if you look at the bill itself, you know, it specifically lays out the places where we are talking about where we would not suspend a license. And those are specifically related to petty misdemeanors and driving after suspension and revocation that fall within the, misdemeanor level. So if folks are violating laws that differ from that, well, then that's a different conversation. This bill is specifically targeted at those lower level things that really don't have the same level of impact on the overall system and the overall safety of everybody else. That's really what the point is of this bill.
Representative Johnson.
Chair Mariani, members. And it brings me to the situation. If somebody's speeding in a school zone with children present and they don't pay their fine, is it just a speeding ticket? And they're continually doing that. So I have concerns on that. If they're going to be speeding around kids by a park or a school and continue to do that and not pay their fines, I think their license should be suspended or revoked, because it could be dangerous. But another issue I want to talk about is the look back. So if somebody actually paid their reinstatement fees, and this, I've been trying to find out how far this goes back to a look back to reinstate driver's licenses. If it goes back 10 years, so I do know people that had license suspended and it's been suspended for 10 years or better. But now we had all these people in between time that have actually paid their reinstatement fees. Are those people do a refund because they paid their reinstatement fees because we have the look back in this bill?
Representative Beckerfeld.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple things I want to clarify. So first of all, this doesn't forgive the, you would still need to pay your $20 reinstatement fee. What it does though is allow you to get that license reinstated. It just opens up that process for the folks who fall within the categories of this bill. The other piece is that this would not, this isn't a get out of jail free card for folks who are doing very dangerous things like speeding through a school zone. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about examples like the testifier here today who got a parking ticket and wasn't able to get down to, you know, come up with the money and get down to get it paid in time before her license was suspended. That's what we're talking about. We're not talking about, you know, felony level, really dangerous behavior here. We're talking about the kinds of behavior that often is not fully, you know, up to the person. You know, the person who violates may not have the resources. And so what we're saying is there is not a point in punitively suspending their license on top of, you know, they're still going to have to pay those fines. And that's what I said at the beginning. You know, the cost of the fiscal note is not from forgiving any fines. It's from the not paying the $20 reinstatement fee. People would still have the obligation to pay those things, and the courts and the system would still have all the other remedies at their disposal.
Representative Johnson.
So in other words, right now they could pay, these people could pay their reinstatement fees and get their license back, other than if they still have fines or in surcharges to pay. I just have problems with this because, like I say, driving is a privilege, and I have yet, this is the first person I've ever heard of that's had their driver's license suspended for not paying a parking ticket. It's usually driving offenses that affect the driver's license and not parking citations in it from a city, and those are usually under city ordinance, which don't affect the driver's license status at all. So that's my 2 cents worth on this bill.
Very well. Representative Grossel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Beckerfin, for bringing us forward. I guess when you're talking about the courts or the judges having some discretion, do they have that discretion already that you'd like to see as far as taking into account people's economic situation and so on to where they can wipe these things off?
Representative Beckerfin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think that question is actually more specific to Representative Frazier's bill. Oh, and so okay. That may be better addressed when we...
Representative Frazier, if you'd keep that in mind.
I think he probably heard you, Representative Russell.
Okay. Okay. I guess then, I guess maybe back to the vehicle citation, Mr. Chair, if I may.
Please.
Where am I at here? Administrative fines. Can cities, counties, and state switch to something like an administrative fine that would have less of a burden on people that are driving? I mean, for me, when I was patrolling, I knew what a ticket cost. And in an area, rural area, in a low income area where you know, Clearwater County is, I really had to work hard to give somebody a citation. And I was always hoping that they would, you know, take the advice, give them the warning first, take the counsel, get your stuff squared away, get your fines paid, and let's drive on. Because a lot of these citations are a couple of weeks for the groceries. Is there a different way to address this issue rather than putting more laws on the books for people to have to try try to adhere to.
Representative Becker-Fay.
I would actually defer to Mr. Hunt to give you a more nuanced on the boots on the ground answer for you.
Super, Mr. Hunt.
Unmute yourself.
Chairman Mariani, yes. Representative Grossel, and members of the committee, I'm sorry, my audio cut out for a moment. I didn't hear all of Mr. Grossel's question. I'm wondering if it could be repeated.
I believe Mr. Representative Grossel was asking about alternatives to, following perhaps administrative fines versus these, fines through the criminal system or criminal law. Is that a better way to do this as opposed to taking statutory action here?
Thank you, Chairman Mariani and Mr. Representative Grossel and members of the committee. There are some administrative programs that I'm familiar with, at least in Ramsey County where I work, that handle some driving offenses and particularly traffic tickets in driving after suspension, but all of those folks still have the right to go to court if they don't want to see a hearing officer or go through the administrative phase. But to my knowledge, even the folks that go to the administrative hearings and go to hearing officers, they're still subject to fines and fees, in particular that $75 surcharge. That's more the subject of House File 306. That's, you just can't waive that. No one, even the judges, don't have the authority to waive that fee. That's required. And I've seen situations where the judge will say, I'm going to reduce the fine part of the penalty to $10 or $5, but ma'am, I'm sorry, you still have to pay that $75 surcharge. No judge has the authority to get rid of that. At least now they don't. But if the bill's passed, then there's more discretion. Does that answer your question, Representative Grossel? I'm not sure if it does. I'm happy to give more if you need more information.
Somewhat it does. And if I'm understanding correctly from testimony, that the fine is not what you're trying to forgive here. It is to cut out all of that excess fleecing of people that comes after that. You know, you still want people to be accountable, but you don't want them to get hammered so hard that they can't buy groceries or have other issues. Am I understanding that correctly?
Mr.
Chairman Mariani, Representative Grossel, member of the committee, I think you're exactly right, Representative Grossel, that there's still that discretion there. And what I failed to point out before is that we can still prosecute people for the charges. And if it's a misdemeanor level charge, one of the prior representatives mentioned that the speeding ticket when children are present, we can still prosecute that driver as a misdemeanor offense. And then that driver, if it's endangering children, is looking at 90 days in jail and $1,000 fine. And then the fees, the surcharges that are on top of that. And, you know, as a prosecutor, if I see that, I'm going to go after that driver pretty hard. If there's kids being endangered or other motorists being endangered, I'm going to go after that misdemeanor level offender real hard. And I think, you know, there aren't going to be many sympathetic judges to a case like that. I think that, and also I think, Representative Grossel, your question goes towards the situation with repeat offenders. There are still statutes on the books, and they will be there, you know, forever. That as far as I'm concerned, that allow prosecutors like me to go after repeat offenders, even if they didn't pay their fines and fees, which could happen as a result of the legislation before you now. If you're a repeat offender, that's a misdemeanor level offense. And then prosecutors, municipal prosecutors like me or the folks in my office, we can prosecute that case. And that person is looking at jail time if they have enough traffic tickets on their offense. Thank you.
Very well. Thank you, Representative Hubbard. Thank you, Representative Grossel. I'd like to move to a vote. I do see Representative Hollins. I'm not sure if that your hand was up from before or if you have another question.
It's up from before.
Okay, sorry. Very well. Very well. Well, then, Representative Becker-Finn, your final comments.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really want to thank the testifiers and especially those who have been directly impacted. I think it's important to hear those voices and really appreciate the conversation and discussion today and ask for your support.
Very well. Members, the chair renews his motion that House File 336 be referred to the Judiciary Committee. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Mariani.
Aye.
Vice Chair Frazier.
Aye.
Representative Johnson?
No.
Representative Edelson?
Aye.
Representative Feist?
Aye.
Representative Grossel?
Aye.
Representative Hollins?
Aye.
Representative Hewitt?
Aye.
Representative Cleavorn?
Aye.
Representative Long?
Aye.
Representative Lucero?
Yes.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes yes.
Representative Novotny?
Aye.
Representative O'Neill?
Yes.
Representative Pinto?
Aye.
Representative Poston?
Aye.
Representative Raleigh?
Aye.
Representative Vang?
Aye.
Representative Zhang?
Aye.
That concludes the roll.
Very well. Can you give us your count?
18 ayes, one nay.
Very well. Members, on a vote of 18 ayes and one nay, House File, the motion prevails, and House File 336 is referred to the Committee on Judiciary. Thank you, Representative and Chair Becker-Finn. Good luck with the bill in the next committee.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair Mariani.
Very well. And members, I do want to just stop very quickly and acknowledge the return of our clerk, of our committee legislative assistant, Ms. Ogunfolani. Caitlin, welcome back. I'm glad you've recovered and look forward to hearing tales I'm just kidding. Welcome back. It's good to have you back.
Thank you, representatives. And Chair.
Very well. Members, the next bill up is House File 306. Representative Frazier moves to refer House File 306 to the Judiciary Committee. Representative Frazier, your bill is before us.
Thank you, Chair. I won't spend a lot of time because I think a lot of what this bill is about has been covered. What I will say is I want to thank all of the testifiers today and all of those that have been part of coalition that have worked to move this forward. To this point, I think oftentimes our laws and our policies are behind what society really needs to have to move people forward and do better. And I think this is a move in the right direction with these two bills that are presented here today, specifically to House File 306. Now, right now, the state requires that judges impose that $75 surcharge. So this bill will give the judges discretion to either waive or minimize the amount of that surcharge or to provide for alternative ways to which folks can work off that or pay for or cover that $75 surcharge. It will require judges to also take into account the ability of the individuals to pay. So in a way, this is a way for the judge to right size to the particular defendant or individual that is being addressed in a court on that particular day or that particular case. It also adds notification language to the back of the ticket. And this is essentially, this is notification language will allow for individuals to know that they'll have the right to ask the judge to consider whether or not they could pay this surcharge to minimize it or to provide for alternative ways that they could actually address the $75 surcharge. With that, Chair, I think so much has been said already around this bill and the other bills, and most things have been covered. So I'll leave it at that, and I'll take any questions.
Very well. Thank you, Representative Frazier. We do have a testifier, Anna Odegaard, who we heard from earlier, and hopefully she's still with us. She wants to testify specifically on this bill. Welcome back, Ms. Odegaard. Please state your name for the record and provide us with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity. My name is Anna Odegaard, and I am the legislative advocate with the Minnesota Asset Building Coalition. I really would like to start just by thanking Chair Becker Finn and Representative Frazier for recognizing how these fines and fees disproportionately burden lower income individuals and for taking leadership on the driver's license suspension reform bill and the fines and fees bill. And also just really thank you, Mr. Chair. You've been prioritizing these bills and been a champion of them for quite a while now, and I just really appreciate that. I also want to just mention and thank, we have several co-authors on this committee who are also supporting these bills. So we'd like to thank Representative O'Neill, Representative Hollins, and Representative Lucero. Really appreciate your support. I was going to go into some details about the bill, but I don't think that's necessary. I think that has been done very effectively. I do want to mention that House File 306, the reform that gives judges that discretion over the $75 surcharge waiver, is right exactly in line with the American Bar Association's guidelines on court fines and fees. I'm going to just read you two sentences out of that. Their guidelines state, if a state or local legislature or a court imposes fees in connections with a conviction for a criminal offense or civil infraction, the amount imposed should never be greater than an individual's ability to pay. No law or rule should limit or prohibit a judge's ability to waive or reduce any fee. And a waiver of fees should be accessible to people for whom payment would cause a substantial hardship. So I think you can see that Representative Frazier's bill gets exactly to the point of that and ensuring that the fines, fees, and surcharges imposed are within the ability of a person to pay those and to be accountable for what's being asked of them. Both the driver's license suspension reform bill and the surcharge waiver bill are supported by a broad coalition of stakeholders. We've been working with a lot of folks to make sure that we put together some very nicely balanced bills, balancing the reform with the accountability. So we've had help from multiple city attorneys, public defenders, many community organizations, including racial justice organizations and faith-based groups and others who are really concerned about the way that criminal justice fines and fees impact especially communities of color and lower income communities. And of course, the Minnesota Asset Building Coalition, my organization, supports these bills because our members work every day with families who are struggling financially and for whom that $75 state surcharge is truly a burden, for whom a driver's license suspension can really lead to a financial crisis. So thank you again so much to our bill authors and co-authors and Chair Mariani for making these reforms a priority.
Very well. Thank you, Ms. Odegaard. We do have questions and comments. I'll begin with Representative Raleigh.
Thank you, Chair. I really appreciate it. For the testifiers or the author, how many offenders currently take advantage of the ability to pay the surcharge in installments? Because that's the current law right now. Do we have an idea or an estimate of those numbers?
Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Rowdy, for that question. I do not have that data, so I will refer to the test of any of the testifiers if they have that information.
Ms. Odegaard.
Mr. Chair, this is what I know about that. In terms of paying court fees in installments, generally your fines have to be greater than $300 in order to be able to pay those in multiple installments. You can pay them in three installments, I believe, if it's greater than $300. If it's less than that, you need to pay half up front, and then you may pay in one other installment. And so I don't know the exact number who do that, but I do know that we are still looking at folks who can't pay that 50% up front. What I can share with you is that we asked the Minnesota Justice Research Center to do a little bit of research around how many of these surcharges go into default. In other words, get sent to collections. And I asked them to look at cases. They looked at cases over the last 6 years, and they looked at cases that were assigned a public defender, so a defendant who had proven that they were in a state of indigency, and then cases separately that had not been assigned a public defender. And what it looks like is that for folks who are not assigned a public defender, about 10% of those cases end up with fines and fees in default and being sent to collections. And for folks who are assigned a public defender, it's just a little over half. So almost half of people end up with that case at some point being sent to collections. So that doesn't exactly answer your question, but I think it does get at the issue of payment of these fines and fees being a hardship, especially for folks who are facing indigency.
Very well. Representative Raleigh.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, just to clarify the last statement that Ms. Odegaard said, default over 6 years is 10% if they don't have a public defender, and it's half, meaning 5% or half of all cases. Sorry, I just...
No, that's quite all right. Good to be clear. Ms. Odegaard.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I will actually send you the data. I'll email it to you right after this hearing. But what I meant was for folks who are not assigned a public defender, it's about 10% default. For folks who are assigned a public defender, it's a little over 50% of those cases end up in default and end up being sent to collections.
Very well. Representative Raleigh?
Mr. Chair, I've got two questions left. They're really quick. First one is, what special circumstances should the court consider when taking a look at the offender's ability to pay? Because there's listed in there special circumstances, and I've got an example of that if it's needed.
Representative Frazier, and you do have several testifiers that might be good to weigh in on.
I'll just say I believe you've got to look at the overall, the entire circumstance of the individual on that day in court. I think it's hard for me to say that right now. Every judge will look at that individual in front of them and make those decisions based on the information that they're provided. But I'll pass on to testifiers if they have any more insight into that.
Ms. Bryant or Mr. Hunt? If any of you are trying to say anything, you're muted.
Mr. Dave Hunt here, Representative Mariani, and members of the committee. In my guess is that special circumstances could be pretty broad, and it would be left to the individual judge to hear a story from a driver and decide, yeah, that's a special circumstance that needs consideration. So I think what the representative was mentioning was that there's a list of criteria to consider under in 306 when waiving the surcharge: income, number of dependents, financial resources, and then the last one is any special circumstances. You know, somebody's got a huge hospital bill. They just got kicked out of their apartment and they need to pay a down payment to move into a new one. I think it might be anything. And certainly, you know, the judges, they have, you know, they're there because they have good judgment and they can listen to the story and say, yep, that's a special circumstance that I'm going to take into account and waive part or all of the surcharges.
All right. Representative Raleigh.
Mr. Chair, final question on this one. This goes to the kind of the intent of the bill. If the author could look at 2.23 of the bill. So would the author, and I'm not asking you to do this in this committee, I'm asking from the general standpoint of, do you think this would be a better approach to take 2.23 and say, the court may reduce the amount or waive payment of the surcharge required under this subdivision, and then end that with a period? Because Mr. Hunt testified that we want to give judges discretion and that justice is on a case-by-case basis, and that there are going to be special circumstances. And what I'm hoping to do with Representative Frazier is make this more inclusive for the judge's decision, as opposed to reduce to a laundry list, which is located in 3.25 through 4.2. What I'm wondering is, why should we limit this when we have an opportunity to truly open this up to a judge's discretion and put the give the judges the opportunity to use this law the way that I believe that Representative Frazier is trying to get it to. And by the way, Representative Frazier, I support this.
I appreciate it.
Representative Frazier, interesting question. And this subdivision speaks to the notice on the uniform traffic ticket. I just caught that now, but Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Raleigh, I appreciate you sharing that information. I will say if there's any time we can be more inclusive and provide broader discretion to ease things for individuals in these situations, I think we take a look at that. So that's what I can say today. And I appreciate your support on this bill.
Very well. I think you were done, Representative Raleigh. Okay, thank you, sir. Representative Johnson and then Representative Cleavor. Representative Johnson.
Chair Mariani, Representative Frazier, I want to thank you for this bill that you brought forward. I wish it actually go farther. I'll get into a minute or two, but I want to get back on the was brought up about installments of the fine or fees and surcharges. I know one of the judges in my district that I have a feeling that these rules are set up by the district, because a judge in my area, when I was still a deputy, I was doing bailiff duty that day for another case because of the volatility of that case. But the judge had set up $25 a month for 12 months for the person to catch up on all his fines and fees and surcharges. He had already waived the fines. So I think the judges already have a lot of latitude as far as setting up a payment plan that works for each individual. But again, it comes back to the surcharges and the fees that the state has. I don't know if you're aware of the last time in 2014, our surcharges and fees were raised during that biennium on a number of different things. And one thing, they even added a new one, the technology fee, which was supposed to expire in 2016, but they're still collecting the technology fee. It goes back, I don't know how many actually have a landline telephone anymore, but there's a tax on there, still on the phone line at the federal level to pay for the War of 1812. So once we put these things on, they never seem to go away. And that's one thing. The problem is if you get our fees and our surcharges have gotten way out of hand. Now, Minnesota statute requires a seatbelt ticket maximum fine of $25. And 8 years ago, at that time, with the fees and surcharges, it was $135. I would just as soon get rid of all the fees and surcharges and the state start doing what they're supposed to do and providing full funding for the courts they're supposed to do, instead of all these fees and surcharges, get the fines back down where they belong. I think people we wouldn't have to do the other bill if we did that, because they would actually, most people would be able to pay their fines. They wouldn't get into trouble with not doing it, because it's the surcharges that are causing the problems, not the fees. And with that, I will be supporting this bill. And I wish it would actually go farther. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Representative Frazier, you may want to work with Representative Johnson to make a bigger bill.
Chair, I was going to say, Representative Johnson, I'd love to talk about putting language together for that if you'd like to.
Terrific. Representative Cleavor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just have to say, this is music to my ears. I'm really excited to hear the great support for this bill. But my reason for wanting to speak today is to just say a heartfelt thank you to Ms. Pavala for being with us today, sharing deep and personal and intimate stories that she shared with us really help us as legislators to do good work for our state. And so I just want to thank her for putting herself out there, advocating for her own situation, but also for others in our state and in our communities. And I wish you the very best of success in getting your education in order and moving forward. Thank you.
Indeed. Thank you, Ms. Pavala. Ms. Pavala, when are you hoping to have your GED completed?
I got a goal set up for June 6th to take the math test. I've completed the three other parts to it. So math is just like the worst for me, because I have learning disabilities. But I've got a tutor right now who's actually a math student at the UMD who is professing in math teaching. So I probably have the best possible teacher that I could have right now. My chances of success are great if everything keeps going the way it's supposed to. So, and I actually have to say thank you to all of you guys too, to like, for inviting me into this and to be a part of this. This is huge for me. Thank you.
Fantastic. It's great to have you here. And hopefully it won't be the last time we have you interacting with your state legislature and you know, looking for your advice and your wisdom. And sharing.
I'm here if you need me. I got
all right.
Lots of information.
Fantastic. Look forward to it. Good best wishes to you, Ms. Pavlov.
Thanks.
All right, members, that's all I have for questions. I don't see any other hands up. Representative Frazier, perhaps some closing comments from you?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Just to say, I think the fact that we're all coming together on this across the aisle, defense, prosecution, other community groups and coalitions, and Ms. Pablo, your story was compelling, and Ms. Bryant, Mr. Hunt, you see those stories every day. So we know what's happening, and we know what this bill can do to have an impact on the lives of those individuals and have an impact on our court systems as well in a positive way. So I encourage everyone to support the bill. Thank you for your time.
Very well, thank you, Representative Frazier. Members, Representative Frazier renews his motion that House File 306 be referred to the Judiciary Committee. The clerk will take the roll.
Mayor Mariani.
Aye.
Vice Chair Frazier.
Aye.
Representative Johnson.
Aye.
Representative Edelson.
Aye.
Representative Feist.
Aye.
Representative Grossel.
Aye.
Representative Hollins.
Aye.
Representative Hewitt.
Aye.
Representative Cleavorn.
Aye.
Representative Long.
Aye.
Representative Lucero.
Yes.
Representative Mueller.
Mueller votes yes.
Representative Novotny.
Novotny, aye.
Representative O'Neill.
O'Neill, aye.
Representative Pinto.
Aye.
Representative Poston.
Aye.
Representative Rowley.
Rowley's an aye.
Representative Vang.
Aye.
Representative Zhang.
Aye.
That's 19 ayes, and that concludes roll call.
Very well. On a vote of 19 ayes, zero nays, the motion prevails, and House File 306 is referred to the Judiciary Committee. Members, we're doing something odd here. We're finishing early. That's no mean feat for this committee. And so I do want to thank you for questions, the engagement, the careful thought that we all put into this and shared with one another. I also want to thank all the testifiers who were present with us today. Thank you, Ms. Odegaard, for helping to arrange for testimony from Mr. Hunt, Ms. Bryant, and Ms. Pavala. Members, we're going to meet again on Thursday, and very quickly we'll have two bills up. On Thursday, House File 28 by Representative Joaquin. The theme for that day basically will be focusing on mental health in our criminal justice system. And so House File 28 will be looking at categories of dementia and Alzheimer's as categories to add to our crime alert awareness systems. And then we'll be hearing a bill from Representative Hollins. Doesn't have a number yet, but it will by then. And that bill, I think we've heard this bill in the prior session. It's a pre-sentencing investigation related issue to include traumatic brain injury information as part of the pre-sentencing scope of considerations. So members, that should be a good, healthy, strong conversation for us as well that day.
Chair Mariani?
Yes, Representative Johnson.
I was just thinking of something on Representative Fraser's bill. Since it is going to judiciary, this could affect the judiciary budget. I would suggest that he hasn't requested a fiscal note for this bill.
100% Johnson, that's wise advice. I was going to raise that issue earlier with both of those bills, and I thought, well, it's Becker Finn's issue, it's not mine, although it may well be all of ours. As in the last session, we put together both of those bills from those committees. That's yet to be determined, but that's sound advice. All right. Actually, I have a couple of minutes. Mr. Walz, any quick comment on the fiscal impact of those two bills that we just moved forward in terms of jurisdiction? And
Mr. Chair, can you hear me?
Yes, indeed.
Mr. Chair, John Walz, House Fiscal Staff. A fiscal note was requested for the Fraser bill. It has not been completed, although the bill from last year had a cost of $1.15 million for the same purpose. So I would expect the cost would be similar when the note comes through this year. I did forward a fiscal note. I'm not sure if it was distributed on the Becker Finn bill, and the cost of that bill was about $550,000 per year in lost revenue.
All right. Thank you for that. Appreciate it. Members, then, until next Thursday, this committee stands adjourned.